Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Colleges across the country responded to the growing threat of the new coronavirus by sending students home for spring break and telling them, essentially, don't come back, we'll teach you online. In Maryland, Governor Hogan has ordered big universities shut for the entire semester. How well will this ramped-up online instruction work for students who may be digital natives but weren't expecting to be all digital scholars this semester? For professors who may never have taught online? For universities, even those already advanced in online instruction, because now the entire educational mission rides on the connectivity, platforms, and support they can supply. The University System of Maryland is in that category. One of its components, UM Global Campus, is a pioneer in distance learning for decades, with 90,000 students online around the world. The other 11 campuses in the system, not so much. But Chancellor Jay Perman told them to deliver all instruction remotely. How will this work? What are the challenges and risks? Will online teaching become the new norm in Maryland's public universities? Joining us by phone to answer some of these questions is Associate Vice Chancellor M.J. Bishop. She directs the William E. Curran Center for Academic Innovation. Bishop came to Maryland 7 years ago from Lehigh University's College of Education and other jobs where, as she says, she, quote, spent a lot of time thinking about how technology can drive education, close quote. Welcome to On the Record, M.J.
Thank you for having me.
How big a change is this?
I would say this is massive. We are looking at completely changing the way in which we're delivering instruction to our students and doing it very rapidly.
Before Chancellor Perman ordered this change on March 8th, roughly what proportion of the university system's instruction was online?
That's really difficult to quantify. We have, obviously, University of Maryland Global Campus, as you mentioned, which is entirely online. Many of our other institutions have been exploring online options by developing online programs, online courses, some hybrid models that have allowed for, online delivery of instruction during the week, and then maybe cohorts coming to campus on weekends and so forth. But we've just not been, looking at moving to remote teaching at quite the scale previous to this.
Do you have any sense of what proportion of faculty members have even taught an online course?
I don't, but a rough guesstimate would be probably in the 10% range, somewhere around there.
So this is a big change for faculty as well as students.
Indeed, absolutely.
How are you helping faculty get ready?
Well, so the Curwen Center works in support of the 12 campuses around the system. We work most directly with the Teaching and Learning Center directors, the folks who are in academic innovation positions on our campuses, to help them with the work that they're doing. So as I look across the system, I'm seeing just a huge mobilization of those folks to work directly with faculty on providing resources, helping them think through, how do they focus on the things that really, the core objectives that really matter in their course and guide them through moving to synchronous activities through video conferencing, audio conferencing technologies, but also looking at the extent to which they could also pursue asynchronous options, such as pre-recording lectures and providing other kinds of learning activities and readings online. So, obviously, for these relatively small staffs in these teaching and learning centers, the instructional design groups, doing this at scale so quickly is a major undertaking. So folks are doing what they can to support as much as possible and hoping for the best here.
I realize that since Chancellor Perman made this change, the system has been on spring break. Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any reaction from faculty?
Generally speaking, I think the faculty and all the folks that we're dealing with directly out of the Curwen Center have really been, at this point so far, just getting prepared. We've been calling it Monday the 23rd, our go date, where most of the campuses will actually begin doing the remote teaching, and I think we'll get a lot more feedback at that point.
That's MJ Bishop, director of the Kerwin Center for Academic Innovation at the University System of Maryland. I'm Sheila Cast, on the record on WYPR. We're talking about how the system is moving all classes online to reduce the threat from the coronavirus by emptying campuses. Just 2 days before Chancellor Perman launched this online mandate, he told all the campuses to test their capacity. Quote, "That means ensuring that online teaching platforms and resources are available for immediate and perhaps sustained use. It means dry runs of all their systems, servers, and networks to make sure high volume does not impede function or performance. And it means making sure that students, faculty, and staff have the equipment and connectivity they need to learn and work from home," close quote. That's a tall order. Is the university system's infrastructure up to this?
Yeah, from what I'm understanding, those tests went really well. We actually met a week ago Friday with all those constituent groups I mentioned earlier, the Center for Teaching and Learning Directors, a group we call the Academic Transformation Advisory Council, who are generally speaking folks that reside and report to their provost in the academic affairs offices. That group was, I was really pleased to hear that they were feeling fairly confident. We asked them to, on a Likert scale of 1 to 5, where 1 is yikes and 5 is we've got this, asked them to sort of gauge where they felt like they were. And across the board, we were running at about 3.5 or 4 on that scale. So they had run their tests. They had mobilized their instructional design units and teaching and learning center folks, and at least were feeling like they could weather the storm.
Well, what about on the other end? What about students and faculty who don't have reliable broadband at home?
Yeah, and that varies across our system. You know, we've got folks out in Frostburg very concerned about connectivity and the lack of reliable wireless out there. And of course, others, you know, students and particularly students who may not have access to the tools they need. Our institutions are working hard at making sure, first of all, by surveying students to find out what their needs might be. And that's something that's been going on since Chancellor Perman sent that earlier statement. Once they know and have a sense of where there are gaps, the institutions are working at creating loaner programs for laptops, for mobile hubs, for wireless access, and also finding ways to at least make those kinds of digital technologies less expensive if it's something that the student or the faculty member has to purchase.
What about the security of students' information if they're using, you know, generally available platforms like Google Docs or some other software that's not part of the university's learning platform?
Yeah, that's tough, and that's a little bit out of my technical expertise, but we have been getting messages from our CIOs reminding us that once they're outside of the campus environment, technology environment, that security is going to become an increasing risk. We've had repeated emails about making sure that we're avoiding potential phishing scams and so forth. And other guidance has been coming from the institutions on how to ensure secure access. At the system, I know, for example, we all utilize a VPN technology that allows us to access the security.
I didn't hear what kind of EPM.
VPN. As in Victor, Paul, Nancy, technology that allows us to access the more secure servers, like, you know, for budget information, HR information, those sorts of things.
We need to take a quick break here. Our guest is University System of Maryland Associate Vice Chancellor MJ Bishop. She directs the William E. Curran Center for Academic Innovation. When we're back, a closer look at some of the educational challenges online. I'm Sheila Cast, on the record. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Like hundreds of other U.S. colleges, the 12 campuses of the University System of Maryland have sent students home because of the risk of spreading the novel coronavirus. When spring break is over next week, all academic instruction will be online. We're talking about it with MJ Bishop, who is Associate Vice Chancellor and Director of the William E. Curran Center for Academic Innovation. It's the offices that focuses on what technology can do for education. What is the biggest instructional challenge you face in this abrupt migration?
That's a good question. There's so many. It's hard to figure out what the top one would be. But I guess probably for me, if I were teaching right now, it would be concern for my students' success and ensuring that their experience is as good as we can make it under the circumstances, and that I'm keeping their stress levels down. You know, we have a lot of high-achieving students who are eager to do the best they can, and I know, back, you mentioned before that I was at Lehigh University previously, we were forced, when I was there, to move to online during 9/11 because of some of the downtime that we had there. And every time we would have a disruption of service through the synchronous platform that we were using, we would get these nervous calls and emails about, you know, as if they were certain that whatever we were talking about at that moment was going to be on the test. So, you know, I think these are anxious times anyway, and making this shift for students, despite the fact they are tend to be more digital natives than some of us who are older, I still think they're going to be anxious, and that's going to be a primary concern of our faculty.
I read one expert, he was actually, I think, writing about high school level scholars, but he wrote, so much of teaching is a relationship, and understanding what that looks like online is a completely new venue to figure out. So if teaching is a relationship, and huge proportions of your faculty haven't tried doing that relationship online, what are you suggesting they do to make that work?
Yeah, well, one of the things, and there's been some debate about this, you know, there are two modes, essentially, when you're doing this remotely, as I mentioned earlier. One is a synchronous technology that allows us to interact, as you and I are right now, over the telephone.
In real time.
Versus the asynchronous technologies where I've posted a lot of content to a web page, be it text or video or a pre-recorded lecture, in which we're not communicating in real time. And as you can imagine, the synchronous tools allow a lot more of that relationship building than the asynchronous tools do. So there are pros and cons to each, though, because quite frankly, you know, as the pandemic spreads, you know, we're going to have students who will be caring for others, who will be unable to access synchronous tools in the same way that they can asynchronous. So,
in other words, you can listen to a lecture later, even if you can't be in a spot to listen to it right at the time the lecture is being delivered.
Exactly. So we're recommending a mix of those tools because I do think the synchronous component is going to be important for the reasons I mentioned earlier about student stress levels and so forth. They like to know that they're in real time at the other end of a conversation. The other thing that, you know, I think we're going to need to help faculty to understand is that because in this environment we have so many fewer social cues, so I can't, for example, right now see whether you're looking at me with a puzzled look or nodding your head in understanding. We need to be a lot more proactive about how to fill in for the lack of social cues. So more checks for understanding, more opportunities to introduce each other and to learn about each other and to understand who's in the room, the virtual room, so to speak, so that some of those social cues that we typically have when we're in a face-to-face environment can play out in the virtual environment. So, you know, we actually did some research when I was at Lehigh on some of these components of the teaching and learning environment to understand, you know, that these are really important for students. Luckily, in this case, students actually have already been together for several weeks at the beginning of the semester, so some of those things have already happened. But it will be incumbent on faculty to continue to make sure that they're doing what they can to support and continue to build those relationships, as you said.
Well, is the sudden shift that the university system is going through, is it setting up platforms that are interactive?
So we're doing, again, the best we can on short notice. Faculty will be working with a variety, depending on the institution, a variety of video conferencing tools and have those at their disposal. You know, as we get into more of this, I think this will continue to be an evolving situation throughout the semester as faculty start to dabble in additional technologies. I think we'll see more and more of them picking up some of those interactive tools. So, for example, lab courses, you know, there's just a whole lot of virtual labs and simulations that are out there that faculty can use to support students through some of the hard science courses. I think we'll see more interactive technologies being used for studio courses and performing arts courses where, you know, we can have a student record performances or actually, you know, FaceTime them to their instructor in real time and then critique and reflect on their performances. So, yeah, I think we're doing the best we can right now, but we'll see a lot more of those interactive technologies come to play as the semester goes on.
That's MJ Bishop of the University System of Maryland talking about how the system is moving all its academic instruction online as a precaution against COVID-19. I'm Sheila Cast on the record on WYPR. What kind of students is distance learning really good for, and what kind of student is not cut out for online learning?
That's a good question. And unfortunately, I think what we're finding in the literature, in the research literature generally, is that the ones that are less successful in an online environment tend to be those from lower socioeconomic situations and, you know, basically students who have not been as well prepared to be self-regulating. So they're coming from, they're less well prepared in their high school experiences and so forth. Of course, the exact students that we're hoping to help succeed in a much more effective way. So, you know, those are major concerns that we need to make sure that if we end up in an extended period of this kind of remote teaching, that we're starting to be really proactive about how to address.
But essentially, then, these sound like the same students who probably aren't doing well in the classroom.
Yeah, that could be the case. But I think it just is exacerbated in an online environment for the reasons that we were talking earlier about the relationship building. And, you know, these students tend to need a bit more direct coaching and feeling like, they have the faculty have their backs and that they're going to be successful in the environment. So when we move to online and lose all of those additional social cues, these are the learners that tend to be the ones that fall even further behind than they would have if they were in the classroom.
The courses that will resume after spring break were not designed to be online. And so what are the implications of that for moving forward? I mean, you've got a whole bunch of faculty members who are experiencing it for the first time. What if they have a bad experience?
Yeah, well, that's a big danger in this. And some of the media that focuses on higher education, the Chronicle and Inside Higher Education, there's been quite a debate on that back and forth. You know, is this going to be our black swan moment where now suddenly, you know, everybody's going to be convinced that online works and that we're moving forward with it? Or is this, you know, are we running the risk here of this ending up being a bad experience for faculty and students? We've been really very deliberately trying to make a distinction between online education and remote teaching. Online education really requires a lot more planning, a lot more instructional design for all the reasons you just mentioned, that, you know, we want it to be interactive. We want to make sure that courses are front-loaded with the materials that students need in order to be able to succeed, as compared to a face-to-face class where I can make adjustments on the fly and I can see my students looking confused in the classroom and so forth. So we're working hard at trying to keep those things keep the distinction there between online and remote teaching. We are running the risk of this potentially not working as well as we hoped. I think the issue here is, you know, just making sure that while the house is on fire, that we're doing the best we can to help students succeed.
So I return to the rhetorical question I raised early in the show. Let me ask it to you instead of just to the air. Do you expect this episode will vaunt online instruction into the default mode of instruction at the University System of Maryland?
I don't know that I would go that far. However, from a change management perspective, I think this is creating a lot of opportunities that we need to be prepared to capitalize on. We're hearing faculty now asking questions about how to stay focused on what really matters on their syllabus in order to help students succeed. We're hearing faculty talk about how to rethink assessments with an eye toward academic integrity. We're hearing faculty ask about how to support their student success from a distance so the pandemic, you know, doesn't disrupt their future plans, and as well as the current disruptions. I think when we think about those things and recognize that these are the things we've wanted, you know, our institutions and our faculty to be really thinking about from an academic innovation perspective, that, you know, that we need to make sure that after this experience, we circle back and say, okay, so let's continue that conversation. And who knows, you know, I think, too, having dabbled a bit in the technologies, that they may be a bit more open to the online piece as well. But I don't think it's just about the move to online. I think it's also the move to some of these other better instructional design approaches to their courses.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Me too. Thank you.
M.J. Bishop, Ph.D., is Associate Vice Chancellor of the University System of Maryland. She directs the William E. Kerwin Center for Academic Innovation, which does research and supports faculty and staff in understanding what technology can do for education. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we've got links to more information about distance learning and the Center for Academic Innovation. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for being with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.